As you know, there are a lot of text entry apps out there for the iPad. Phraseology, however, is different. It's a writing application for the iPad. With tools to quickly look up words and its sister app terminology, arrange paragraphs with ease, and even inspect your work in a markdown preview, Phraseology is powerful enough for even the busiest of writers. Check it out in the iOS App Store. It's probably the best $4 you could spend today.
Steven.
Patrick.
Still subbing for Mike.
Sure.
Who is away on vacation, or as the Brits say, on holiday.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
He does a lot of work for this network.
And that's the thing, right? And I've mentioned this several times before on the podcast here, and I don't think people really understand what it's like to go work a full-time job with a commute on either side of that, only to come home and put in another several hours of work before you hit the sack, which is essentially what he does.
Right. And I would say for every hour you have behind the microphone, you have an hour in GarageBand or uploading stuff or dealing with email or...
Mm-hmm.
So I think listeners only get I would say 50 to 60% of the time that Mike actually spends working on stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And I seriously commend him for it. But like with everything, this is what he wants to do, right? This is his passion. This is what he does, what he wants to do with his life. Right. He doesn't want to work at the job that he currently works at. He does that just as a way to make it able to, afford the opportunity to follow his dream and his passion, which is this. And so I can't, once again, pimp enough the sponsorship link, which I'll link to in the show notes, as well as, for developers and people with something, as well as the donation link. Because seriously, that's the only way that his workload's going to get any reduced, and he's just going to replace it with more fantastic stuff.
Right, so. It's the only way we can free Mike from the chains of a day job.
I couldn't agree more, and if anyone needs to be free to make something great, it's him. All right, so I wanted to talk with you, Stephen.
Okay, that's good, because you're stuck
with
me.
Because we are, yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit, I'm in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul.
See?
And Bloomington, because Bloomington is technically now... we're almost to the point where it should be the Tri-Cities, but we've been the Twin Cities for so long.
I was going to say that math is hard. Two and three and... Yeah. Which one is it?
Well, I mean, here's... designation for a city is generally a population over 100,000, and Bloomington surpassed that years ago. But I digress. But the Mall of America, the largest shopping mall in America, largest enclosed shopping mall, mm-hmm. is in Bloomington. And so, it's here and it's close, and we go out there a fair bit. That's actually one of the closest shopping malls to us. So if we've got some shopping to do in a mall, that's where we tend to go. And one of the interesting things about the Mall of America Apple store is that it's got a Microsoft store directly across from it. I mean, literally right across the hall.
I guess that's where I've seen a picture of that. I guess maybe that's where that picture's from.
Mm-hmm.
It's like literally like you walk out, like if you threw a rock out of the Apple store, it would land in the Microsoft store doorway. Like,
that's correct.
Right across.
Yes. Right across. Literally, yes. You can walk a straight line between one to the other.
It was not accidental at all.
And Microsoft is doing all that they can to open up all of their stores as close to, if not next to, an Apple store as possible. Which, if you ask me, is completely the wrong strategy, and that will become apparent in a few minutes here when I talk about the subject I want to talk about. But here's what I decided to do the last time I was at the mall and I was alone and I didn't have a three-year-old demanding that I take her to the American Girl store. Or a wife who wanted to do a bunch of returns. I took the opportunity to just kind of stand there between the two stores for a little while and make some observations.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was curious. I just wanted to see, okay, what are the things I can notice about this? The first thing I noticed was this, and I think that this is really, really important. I think it's about more than just these two stores. But the Apple store looked nice and busy, right? It was busy. I mean, right. The Mall of America Apple store is actually one of the busiest stores in the country.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, that should be no surprise that it's super busy. It should also come as no surprise that the Microsoft store did not look as busy.
Shocking.
But that said, the Microsoft store had a fair amount of people in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
I would say probably a good, I'm just going to take a guesstimate here, 40 to 50 people.
That's not bad at all, actually.
No, it's not bad at all. Now, keep in mind, Mall of America is a very busy shopping mall.
I mean, it has a roller coaster inside of it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, and that's and I happen to be there at a busier time of the day versus, you know, say, you know, middle of the afternoon on a Wednesday or something.
So. Right. Okay.
So I guess that number isn't too shocking. And if you were to do a comparison and look over at the Apple store, I would guess that there were probably a good 200 to 300 people in the Apple store.
Yeah, they're always nuts.
Yeah, you know, no comparison. But that said, a fair amount of people. Another thing I noticed was the number of people at the Apple store coming out holding bags and, you know, obviously having purchased something or coming out with their, you know, their MacBooks or whatever else they took to the Genius Bar. So they're all coming out with some sort of product, whether they purchased it or not. Lots of activity going on. I look over at the Microsoft store, and I'm like, there's a good 50 people in there.
Mm-hmm.
It should look busy. But here's why it doesn't. They actually have chairs in front of all of their stools in front of all of the tables where they've got their, you know, demo PCs set up.
So people are just hanging out, sitting down. People
sitting down and surfing. Basically using it like an internet cafe. Now, I was there for a good long time.
Mm-hmm.
It is very clear that the employees allow this behavior. There was never, I never saw an employee approach any one of these people to say, you know, hey, can I help you with something? Or can I, you know, they were just sitting there.
Right.
In chairs. Heads down in a screen. Surfing. So I decided to go in.
Okay.
I go in and just kind of, you know, browse around and kind of peek over people's shoulders. And, you know, exactly what you would expect. 8 of the 10 screens are in Facebook. You know, a couple of others are, you know, doing something else. But, I mean, it's obviously people who are not interested whatsoever in being there to buy anything.
Do you think they encourage that to keep, so when you walk by, you see, I mean, obviously not everybody is going to stand there and look like you didn't notice this. Do you think they do that so as you walk by and glance out of the corner of your eye that it looks like it's busy?
Well, that's the thing, right? The Apple store looks like a party, right? The reason it looks like a party is because they've got like three stools in there, and those stools are only to be used on one-on-one sessions, right? Like, you know, they basically hide those stools if right. There's no... I mean, you know that, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know that's what those stools are there for. Then otherwise, right. There are no chairs. There's no place to sit, right?
Yeah, they don't want you hanging out for an hour.
They don't want you hanging out for an hour. But even more so, I think that chairs make people have a sense of complacency.
Interesting.
Right?
Right.
In other words, it's not just about we don't want people hanging out. It's also about we don't want people to be too comfortable. We want them to be a little bit uncomfortable because we have the solution for that. The more uncomfortable they are, the more easily they can see that solution.
Which is a new...
They can see this thing that they can take right. home and sit down and surf with.
I was going to say, it's the new iPad or whatever they're looking at.
Right.
Yeah, I know at Macworld, Thomas Brand of eggfreckles.net and I, we were walking around and I had to go pick up something at the Apple store in San Francisco, and it was busy, but of course it was even busier because Macworld was there, and you know, there's just Apple nerds everywhere. And so he wanted to play with a MacBook Air. He's got a 13-inch, wanted to play with the 11. So we're sitting there using it, and in the maybe 10 minutes he was there, he was playing an Automator with it. The 10 minutes where they're looking at it, like two or three people come by and ask us if we need help. And when we say no, you kind of got the vibe. They're like, okay, well, scram. You know, like, not in a negative, not necessarily in a negative way, but just in we've got more people coming waiting. In. You know, we got to keep things moving. We got to keep things moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a different philosophy than, I think, what you saw at the Microsoft store.
Right. Well, and I think that one of the reasons why in the 45 minutes to an hour that I was there, I saw not one bag leave that Microsoft store is not just because they're, you know, the people are just sitting there and just looking to serve, but it's also because the chairs make them complacent. They make them, okay, this is fine. I don't need this. I can just sit here. I can just sit here and do the business I need to do and check my Facebook and, you know, and be on Twitter and do whatever else I'm going to do. I don't have to take anything home to do this. I can sit here to do this.
Right.
And I think that speaks to a greater philosophy about sitting to begin with, right? One of the best tips for meetings that I am aware of, and I've heard repeated several times elsewhere in different contexts, is this, and that is that if you want to have a really good, short, productive meeting, remove all the chairs from the room. Get people in there and keep them standing.
Right. I think it's one of the arguments for a standing desk, right? That you are more productive when you're standing, that you're not kicking back and goofing around. But because you're up, you know, like you said, there's almost a sense of urgency that, hey, you need to be doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to be active. You need to be doing something. But I think even still, one of the reasons why, like for a meeting that works really well, is that there's a sense of complacency and status quo that comes when you're sitting down. You're less likely to come up with that bold new idea or that fresh way of thinking about things. And you're also less willing to make snap decisions, right? Whereas you have a meeting without chairs, and people are ready to sign off on anything just to kind of get back to what they were doing and have a seat, right?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so bold decisions get made. Quick decisions get made. People are not complacent. They're about action, and they're about, okay, let's do this so I can get back to my desk and sit down.
Right. And there's the flip side of that, too. Like, in the Apple stores, you know, you said there's bar stools at one-to-one where you're coming in and working with a creative for an hour. And then there's bar stools at the Genius Bar. And I think that works to calm people down. They come up, they sit down. That's why in most bars you come in and sit down, because they want you to spend time there. But it feels like you're having a more permanent, more meaningful interaction at the Genius Bar when you're sitting.
Yeah, yeah. And also, if you're coming in there stressed out or, you know, hopped up about some problem that you're having, you know, I just got this fixed and now I'm back in and it's broken again. And you know how that goes.
Yeah.
At the Genius Bar.
If they're sitting
every day, all day long, you come in, you sit down, and suddenly at least a little bit of that stress is gone.
Right. And it's harder for them to take a swing at you if they're sitting.
Yeah. Man, I don't envy the geniuses at all. That is a effing hard job.
It was. And then managing the geniuses was even harder.
Yes. So, before I became basically a hobo and and homeless, I'm anything but. I worked at a college.
Mm-hmm.
I was the head mat guy for a college, a fairly, you know, a very, very good 4-year private liberal arts school, highly regarded, full of just extremely smart kids. But one of my kids, who was one of my student workers, who I personally trained from not knowing much about Macs to by the time she left, she could put together and take apart a G5 with her eyes closed. Grace, she is now a genius bar manager at the Uptown Minneapolis location, and I gave her a very good recommendation for that. But
mm-hmm.
You know, it's great to see. It's great to see like one of my former students now able to just run circles around me, in the Mac knowledge department. It's fantastic. And I don't envy what she does one bit, not one bit.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, that said, getting back to my point, I think that, I wonder how much more product Microsoft would sell if they just got rid of those chairs. I wonder if it would make a difference. I'd be curious to find out. I was almost tempted to just walk in.
Just take chairs out from underneath people.
And just take chairs out from other people. Walk in and, basically, they generally either wear red shirts or blue shirts with, like the Microsoft. I mean, they try to be as much like Apple as possible. I've got a blue or red shirt that color. Find out what they're wearing that day. Change into that shirt. Walk on in and just pretend like I'm an employee and just say, excuse me, sir, but I'm going to need to take that chair. Thank you.
Sir, we're going to need that chair for the back of the store.
Yeah. Sorry, sir. You can have it back in 3 hours. We need it for a special presentation. Thank you.
Special presentation in the garbage dumpster. So let me ask you this. Do you have standing workspace? And I know you've got a couple of workspaces, I think.
Yeah.
Best I can tell.
Yeah. Well, no. No standing. I've thought about it. I flirted with the idea for about 5 or 10 minutes, but no.
Okay.
But one thing I do that I've discussed on the podcast before is I change my locations of work frequently.
Mm hmm.
Because I find that just simply changing location makes me more productive, even if it's within the house. So even in our third floor loft area where our office, our desks are set up, mm-hmm. Mine and my wife's, we've got a door that's set on a couple of those IKEA, sawhorses that are made for holding, flat surface desks sort of things.
Right.
We've got a door on one, and so it's not unusual for me to, if I'm here recording the podcast for a couple hours and it's like, okay, I can get another couple hours to get work done before Beatrix comes home,
mm-hmm.
I'll just get up and go sit over at the table there.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm sitting at right now. And I was just thinking, if I'm at home, I generally work at the dining room table. But, this afternoon in between shows, I think I'm just going to stay out here because it's almost like that same thing. That complacency goes away when you're maybe doesn't go away completely, but is diminished when you are someplace different just because, you got to pay attention to how your setup is maybe a little bit more. And the normal distractions I have sitting at the dining room table, i.e. my kids running around, is not going to happen out here.
Right. Well, and I also find that when you're consciously moving somewhere to do X,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm going to go here to work on this. has a tremendous effect. Just that mental trigger to say, I think I'm going to go work on this project at the dining room table, kind of keeps you focused, you know, flips your mind into the mode of, okay, once at dining room table, working on project.
Right, exactly, because why I wouldn't be sitting here with my laptop for another reason.
Right, exactly. You know, so, I mean, I think there's something about playing a game with your brain when it comes to that stuff that's interesting as well, at least for me.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
So, I don't know. I think, you know, the takeaway from this as we wrap it up is just, you know, the idea of complacency and the idea of gaming your brain, gaming the system. You know, we're humans. We're
that's true.
Stupid. We are stupid. Right? Our brains are just so trickable, right? Just, you know, do any search for, you know, Penn and Teller, and then watch them. Watch your brain go, how did they do that? Right after, they show you exactly how they're going to do it.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the things I love about Penn and Teller, right, is that they say, okay, here's the trick. We're going to make Teller disappear. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to do it like this, and like this, and like this, and like this. Okay? Got it? Terrific. Let's go. And Teller disappears, and you're like, oh!
Holy cow.
Why? Because your brain is stupid. Your brain is still trying to figure out how it was tricked into seeing something that it knows is not true, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not seeing something, but it tricked into believing something that they know is not true, that they were just shown is not true. Yet the brain still goes, what the F? You know?
What is happening out there?
Exactly. And that we can do the same thing with many of those things from a productivity standpoint. That retailers do this stuff to us all the time. That they hire special consultants that come in and do this stuff. And it's way more complicated than just putting the sugared cereals at kids' eye level, right? It is so unbelievably complex that, you know, because I have a friend who does this stuff. I have a friend who's what he does. He's a consultant to retail businesses, and he can walk into any store in the country, doesn't matter when. He'll look at his watch, and he'll look at the date, and he'll look at the time, and he'll spend about maybe 15 minutes there. And he'll say, okay, here's what you need to do. You need to move this to there, and move this to there, and move this to there, and then, okay, now watch your sales increase by 8%.
Right. The brain is a funny thing.
So, oh well. Okay, well, cool. Thanks a lot, Stephen.
Thank you,
appreciate
Pat.
It.
No, thank you.
And this has been highly interesting, and we've got more to come. So,
sounds
we'll talk
good.
Later.
Alrighty.
All right.
Bye.
Cheers.